Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our honorable and noble listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive. I'm interested in speaking with you today. You can dial 805-727-7013. 727-7013. It's 805-727-7013. Your own religion means alive. Yes. Religion means alive. We're waiting for you to call in at 805.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
What number was this, guy?
Oh.
The show or his private number? Oh, okay.
I'm texting you the number. 805-727-7013.
Okay, call in the show.
Yes, sir.
Dial the show.
So, dear beloved people, we are waiting our brother and our friend, Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam from the great city of Selma, Alabama. Religion means alive. We are experiencing some technical difficulties, waiting for our brother and friend, Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam of Selma, Alabama, to appear on the show. He's now with us, and we're honored and privileged beyond words to have him with us. We've been through a tumultuous time. We've been in an election, and praise be to Allah, we won the election. So we're now Imam Councilman-elect. I told the people at the Eid that I did not want to be known as councilman. I am Imam first. The Word of God is vital and most important, and the Word of God is what produced me. And therefore, I am going to be forever grateful to Almighty God, Allah. But I never thought I would run for political office. But I tell you one thing. One of the people that I did observe was our dear brother and dear friend, brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam, who didn't come out as Willie Bobo, didn't come out as John Johnson. He came out as Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam, and according to the Christian Science Monitor, he was quite an impressive figure. And in my feeling, if had he continued, who knows, he might end up being the governor of this state. I just don't believe that we can win in America. I'm convinced beyond a shadow of doubt that, as Reverend Ike used to say, you can't lose with the stuff I use. And I believe with the stuff we have, which is 400 years of history, a genetic predisposition to leading the world, and all we got to do is step forward and get about our Father's business. And our Father's business is the earth that has produced us, and Mother Nature is on our side. I feel very, very honored to have with us today, after we had a hiatus because we just couldn't get here. We had to campaign. I never knew what it was to be on a job where we just had to get out there and campaign, but we had to campaign every day. By God's grace, we campaigned and we won 494 to 224 to the opposition. They said we were too old. They said all kinds of things about us, but it didn't matter with us. We went on and campaign, and Allah blessed us in the campaign to win. Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam, I'm sorry to have to welcome you back with a tumultuous time in your field, your wife, which is the law, and to tell you that it seems that your field is in a lot of trouble. Well, I would say your field is in trouble. What do you say, firstly, about the Supreme Court decision in its ruling of Mr. Trump, the President Trump, as it related to the other circus and the band and the Muslims from the five countries?
Well, I think that the decision everybody must realize is temporary. It's not a permanent decision coming down from the Supreme Court. But it was not so much a legal decision as it was a political decision. What do I mean by that? Both the class that would be restricted by the president's action, they got something out of the decision, and President Trump got something out of the decision. And what really happened was that, again, you can go all the way back to Bush and Gore. In crunch time, the Republicans are not on that court, are not going to embarrass in a big way a sitting president. And if he had lost the decision completely, it would have been a big embarrassment for him. So now you have a compromise-like decision that splits the difference. And so what you have now, the state of Hawaii going into court because the Trump administration has come up with a very narrow determination as to what kind of relationships of lineage come within those who have the kind of relationship that can come into the country. For instance, a grandmother cannot come, but a fiancé can come. That's not what the court decreed. That's the Trump's administration interpretation of the decree. So you have a while you're going back in and saying that interpretation is too narrow. And that's what happened when you come with these political split decisions.
Well, how was it that the court was able to rule you not, was it, what was it, a 5-4 or was it a nine zip? And this is
no,
only
6-3. It was 6-3.
Can you give us the majority and tell us who the minority votes on that court was?
I can't remember, but I think Thomas and Rehnquist and Gorsuch, not Rehnquist, Alito and Gorsuch, I think.
Aren't you surprised that Mr. Justice, Chief Justice Roberts didn't dissent?
No, I'm not surprised. If you go back and look at Obamacare, when it comes to these crunch time decisions that undergut presidential powers, Roberts is not willing to do that in a big way. He's just not.
Why, what do you think the reason is? That's some judicial. What do we know about Chief Justice Roberts, why he wouldn't have gone up? I was kind of surprised. I'm not surprised at Gucci. I'm not surprised at Alito. But Justice Roberts joined, and he would want to extend the, not to grant the ban, if I'm not correct.
Well, he voted, but the whole decision was, like I said, a split decision. The ban is not totally and absolutely being implemented, but it's not completely. The immigration situation is not completely free of restrictions. That was the decision.
What do you think of the decision as a Muslim and Muslim African American?
I think it's a terrible decision. Again, I think Trump had been shut out in various courts on the lower level. And I don't think the Supreme Court wanted to completely invalidate the restriction, the ban. But in 90 days, I think the question is going to become moot.
Mr. Trump,
because the ban, the decision only operates for 90 days.
I want to now turn our attention to the Affordable Care Act. And, I hate calling it Obamacare. I think that was a way to really associate it with the President of the United States and to dust, rub it in, as one Caucasian says, and I would say he's a white man because he's got that mindset. He said he didn't support it only because of President Obama. He said, but they didn't have President Obama's name on it. He was supported, even though he was very poor, and certainly the look of his teeth, he seemed to need as a dentist. What do you say about that?
Let me just add about the decision, the comments I just gave you on the decision. Now, sometimes I still would read a Supreme Court decision in its totality. Now, with this recent decision, I'm just commenting on the commentary that I heard. So I don't want anyone to think that I've read the case and done a thorough legal analysis. I was just commenting on the commentary that I've been hearing about the case. I wanted to make that clear. I haven't had a chance to read the case in full. But back to your question. I think Obamacare is basically a extra governmental type. The challenge to Obamacare is extra governmental. Since it has nothing to do with policy, there's a cultural concern, and that's to not allow a son of Ham through Canaan to come into office and leave a legacy which abrogates the myth that Ham and his descendants are not capable of shouldering serious ventures such as the responsibility of government. So if you study Trump carefully, it's not just Obamacare. He's systematically trying to undo his complete legacy as if he never served as president. So that's what this thing is all about. They don't have a policy solution. But because they promise their base, playing upon their dastardly Obama resentment syndrome, they promised them that they would repeal. But they don't have anything to replace with. And just yesterday, Trump actually came out and said, hey, if we can't find a replacement, let's go ahead and repeal it. That's what it's all about. It has nothing to do with policy. Originally, the Affordable Care Act came out of a conservative Republican think tank, the Heritage Foundation. Obama thought that by imitating that particular plan, that it would be acceptable to the majority of Republicans. The 2012 Republican nominee passed a similar plan while he was governor of the state of Massachusetts, the Honorable Mitt Romney. He received the Republican nomination with that record in hand. If it was such a big deal, if it was such a downer, if it was a political landmine, then Romney never should have gotten a nomination. The man who helped Obama craft his policy also helped Romney. So it has nothing to do with policy. What's the difference? Romney is not an African American. I know people don't want to hear that, but the truth of the matter, this has nothing to do with policy, but it has something to do with the fact, as Chris Matthews, the journalist, said, they want to leave Obama as if a mere footnote in history. And this is why I resented any African-American from criticizing former President Obama. I could see mistakes that he was making, but as long as they were trying to crucify him, to me it was irrational to throw stones at him. African-Americans saw Jackie Robinson make errors. They saw his batting average not being super. But they didn't go and criticize him. They saw that as pioneering first African-American player, and they saw he was being, his character was being crucified. They were patient with him. So we have lost some of the racial sense, sensitivity, and consciousness that we had as a people back in the 40s of the mid-20th century.
Are you familiar with a fellow by the name of Dr. Cornel West?
Familiar with Dr. Cornel West.
And he was able to tolerate Bill Maher, but it seemed that when President Obama sneezed, he thought President Obama had a severe case of pneumonia. What do you think?
Yeah, but look at what the brother did. Bashed Obama, helped sabotage former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, and now he is one of the ones who helped put Trump in there inadvertently. He's gone back in academia, and you haven't heard a word from him since.
And
What's
so sad about it? And he had almost begged his way back at Harvard. You remember, Summers threw him out of Harvard, and now he begged to beg his way back. I got the back story of it. I think it's really sad, Brother Imam, to see a man who's obviously been blessed with a great mind to turn to be a buffoon. And by the way, what do you think of these so-called public intellectual entertainers and doing the buck dance on the Bill Maher show?
Well, who did that? Now I'm not aware of.
Cornel West got on the show, and I mean, you know, he was his own. I don't know if you watch Bill Maher or not. I barely watch him, but I did watch him.
No, I don't. I don't watch. I wouldn't waste 1 second watching Bill Maher. That's my personal opinion.
I was just a little bit saying, and I saw it, and I just thought West. Now this is the same Bill Maher that got him a black woman and said he was a house nigga. And there was no hue and cry about that. I wonder could any other race say that about their people and be accepted?
Well, he's all within that elitist, leftist, progressive in crowd. And a lot of these so-called leaders are more concerned about the celebrity play that they get on this show, and then really about their offensive statements. They threw a little rhetoric out there so that they could not be accused of challenging it. But at the same time, they didn't hit him so hard that they wouldn't receive an invitation to come on his show again. So we have to be very aware of that kind of situation. Let me say, I don't have very much respect, having been in government, for anyone who advocates a so-called progressive leftist agenda, because it'll never happen. You got Bernie Sanders up there now, a so-called progressive leftist, but the Republicans are ramming all this stuff down the Democratic Party throats, including this health care bill. If it stopped, it's not because the Democrats stopped it. It's stopping because Republicans couldn't get themselves together. So now, you talking all this respect, progressive talk, but you can't even get moderate legislation through the halls of government. How in the world are you going to get all this leftist progressive legislation? It'll never happen. And they got this rap where we focusing too much on President Trump and Russia and not enough on the progressive agenda. You'll never get that progressive agenda during Trump's first term and with the Republicans controlling the House of Representatives and the Senate. Let me tell you and everybody else, if President Trump is not held accountable in this term, the Democrats will not get the House back in 2018. In my opinion, President Trump will win again, and when he wins again, he will consolidate his kind of politics for decades. So if the Democrats really want to have a realistic chance of ever implementing their policy, it's just like what Michael Corleone said in The Godfather when this guy Saluzzo wanted to assassinate Marlon Brando or Don Corleone. And the consigliere, Tom, he wanted to meet with Saluzzo and make a deal. And Michael correctly assessed the situation and said, no, Saluzzo is the key. As long as he's alive, he will never let Pop live. So he had to knock him off. It's the same thing about the Democrats. Trump is an unusual type of politician. He's keeping his base together. The key is to, first of all, confirm what I believe to be the truth, that he and his minions have violated law. But just because they violated law doesn't mean that it's going to be the political will there to impeach him. So the number one goal of the Democrats, if the man is president and he has not violated law, he should be left alone. But if he has violated law, then he should be impeached as a result of high crimes, having violated the Constitution and committed high crimes and misdemeanor. The only chance they'll ever get back in power, in my opinion, in a big way, where they can so-called implement even moderate legislation for the masses, is that they got to make sure that Trump is knocked out. If he's not locked out, they're going to cheat on the voting in 2020. They're going to have all kind of voter suppression. Who going to stop him? If you can't knock the man out when he's violated law, how you going to deal with him when they intensify voter suppression, when they start having Giuliani, who's over the cyber system, go in these states and mess with the machine without a paper trail? So they're not going to pass any policy. What you mean the Democratic agenda? There is no agenda because the Republicans got it locked up. But you do have a crack to get Trump out if he violated the law. And if that happens, then the Republican apparatus is going to disentangle. You can take that to the bank.
What happens if Mr. Mueller brings an indictment? You're a lawyer, and I believe you even taught constitutional law. What happens if the President of the United States, is indicted on obstruction of justice, God forbid, or even espionage charges? And what would then happen? What would the
President, the standard constitutional interpretation, brother, ma'am, is that the president cannot be criminally indicted. So the only option would be that a Republican-controlled House institute impeachment proceedings. They're not going to do that if the media and the Democrats allow this thing to die down until Mueller concludes its report. That's what I mean. The Democrats got to keep the issue on the front burner, continue to stir up public opinion, and hopefully there's enough public opinion out there that supports impeachment that the Republican House must proceed. Now, the Democrats think that they can retake the House in 2018 only if there's a dark cloud over that Trump administration. If that thing not concluded and it looked like the cloud had dissipated, the Democrats are going to take a whipping.
Let me ask you this. What happened in Montana and what happened in the Atlanta suburbs? What does that portend for the Democratic Party?
What happened in the Atlanta suburbs is a good sign for the Democrats. You've been losing that seat by 20 points. You shouldn't allow a narrative to be created that you had a chance to win that seat. You never had a snowball chance in Hades. And all four of those states, Montana, a super red state, you weren't going to win that seat. South Carolina, a super red state.
Can I ask you a political question that's been raised before I get back to the constitutional question? The political question is this. Is it time for the Democratic leadership to go home? Back it up.
It may be time, but not because what happened in Georgia. That's ridiculous.
No, I don't believe
Georgia. I'm saying that because the day afterwards, it was a lot of talk about Nancy Pelosi going home. That had nothing to do with Nancy Pelosi's leadership. Now, it may be, many of them in their mid-70s, it may be that they need to have a retreat and sit back and rationally discuss whether or not it's time for a changing of the guard in the Democratic Party, but not respond to some crazy, irrelevant election that had nothing to do with the age of any Democrat. They lost that seat because Tom Price held it for years and always won by over 20%. Newt Gingrich held it for years and always won by a large percentage.
I thought it was stupid to even come up with that seat. I thought it was a waste of $25 million.
You shouldn't have spent that kind of money, but you can say that there is a change in direction. And when you are cut within a few months, Price won that seat big time as a congressman 2 years ago. And they cut it down to almost 2 points. That was a great accomplishment. But you lost control of the narrative. You let the media. Huh?
And what I don't understand, why didn't they keep the narrative on Trump? They refused to keep the narrative on a man who has a dark cloud, not just a cloud, an actual hurricane over him. And I don't think Mr. Mueller should be.
Because the progressive do not want it to look like Hillary Clinton could have won. They want this myth out there that, hey, they made a mistake. They didn't go with Bernie and Hillary lost, so it was a big mistake on the Democratic Party part. If it's established that it was a big sabotage of Hillary Clinton and Secretary Clinton, and that's verified based upon the facts and the data, then that argument is no longer there. Because after all, they want to be in the driver's seat for the 2020 nomination. I'm talking about the Bernieites and these so-called progressives. So it's in a way, they wishing Trump prevail. I hate to say it like that.
Answer that by saying, I watched the so-called progressive, which is the left, advocate this kind of strategy for the last 40 years. Always they were opposed to anybody who was not on their agenda. I'm beginning to really seriously wonder about the so-called progressive left wing of any party.
Look, you're not going to have the implementation of a revolution. I mean, big-time progressive policies. The last time we really had that was during the Johnson administration and during the time of Roosevelt. Anytime you have these big progressive changes, they ought to almost be a revolution in the street. Now, the truth of the matter is, when you want to have a true radical leftist agenda, you got to overthrow the government. All that stuff go back to so-called Marx. And his thing was not to get power through electoral politics. Ultimately, he talked about a revolution. So you're not going to bring about a revolution.
So in other words,
okay, through electoral politics. That's an oxymoron.
What Senator Sanders was proposing, he said he was for a revolution. So they're not really.
He's talking about a certain political revolution. But where you going to get the, how you going to overpower the Republicans who not going to even go for a moderate change like affordable health care? How you going to get all those folks to vote for your agenda? It's a bunch of pie-in-the-sky, irrational political foolishness, if you ask me. I'm being real. Now, I understand all politics is local. In certain states, you can vote that agenda in. They do it in California. The state of Minnesota has always been able to carry out a progressive agenda. All politics is local. And so that's why our brother Congressman Keith Ellison, if he got any sense, has to stay on the cutting edge of progressive politics because that's his state. But on a national level, this country is center right. That's how Obama and Brother Ellison end up coming up with different opinions. Because Obama always had to rule almost from the center. He couldn't go by the atmosphere in one state.
Let me ask you this. Isn't that more the Islamic way to rule from the center?
Ideally, but we don't have an Islamic government. Muhammad ruled from the center.
I mean, just the
Muhammad ruled from the center. Yes, that's the only way. That's the only way to rule from the center.
That's what I thought. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I want to now turn our attention to another matter, the matter of the possible stacking of the Supreme Court, unless Mr. Mueller and others prevail. Isn't that a danger to Mr. Trump may could almost stack the Supreme Court? We have
brother, if I'm going to just, excuse me for cutting you off, I'm going to tell you point blank. If any justice that can stay back a conservative domination of the court resigned because there was talk that Anthony Kennedy, the swing vote on the court, was thinking about resigning. And if that was the case, I would have taken a position that the fix is in. How you going to give Trump the opportunity to appoint another justice? You change the tenor and tone of the court for the next 30 years. They already got the presidency. They already got the House. They already got the Senate. So who's going to resign and get his man another chance without it being a fix? So when I heard that, I told my wife, well, if he go through with that, that's a fix. Somebody deliberately trying to swing this thing a certain direction within the system. Must be some unseen hands wanting to do that and got the power to make it happen. But now, fortunately, I'm told that Justice Kennedy took the sensible position that he's not about to leave the court now.
Thank God. Let me ask you this. I want to move now to the Bill Cosby, Dr. William Cosby's trial. Any lessons on that trial? What can you say about what you care to comment on that?
Well, I would say I didn't like the systemic results going on in Baltimore, but the system works itself out. And I had to accept what came down within the law. Now, same thing about Dr. Cosby. I accepted the decision, and I'm glad there was a hung jury. Personally, I don't like bringing old stale cases. I don't like to see that. Even though it may fall technically within the statute, I don't like to see that. Because it opened the door for some systemic get back hanky panky. And I haven't been able to figure out completely, but part of what happened to Dr. Cosby, somebody was engaged in some get back systemic hanky panky. In my opinion.
Let's move to another tragic Pennsylvania case. And that is the case of our dear brother, and who is the district attorney of Philadelphia. What say you as a lawyer, practicing prosecutor, and a law professor about the ethical lapse of our dear brother there in Philadelphia? Is that a tragedy or is it a tragedy?
Well, I'm not completely familiar with the facts, and anytime you're dealing with the possibility of misbehavior on that kind of level, you have to go straight at the individual and just condemn the behavior. So I'm always reluctant to do that, but from what I see from the outside looking in, the brother may have, let me put it this way, may have breached the cloak in the sense of engaging in inappropriate behavior. But with that statement, I think I'll leave it at that.
Yes. I think so. I pray for the brother's family, and I pray for him. It's a tragedy. A man who was bantered about as possibly the future governor of the state, won a very important position as there. I think he deserves our prayers, and his family certainly does. It's a tragedy.
Well,
what do you think of
what
the
we can see is that within the context of the national picture, Brother Imam, the African-American political leadership is aging. And we have to understand that the African-American political leadership that emerged out of the 60s, we can always critique our leaders, and you and I have both done that, but they energized the Democratic Party. I remember when, in 1968, this presenter was a student at the University of Georgia. There was a talk about an alternative delegation going to the 1968 Democratic Convention after the Mississippi Freedom Party went up and issued their challenge to the Mississippi delegation in 1964. We know Aaron Henry and Fannie Lou Hamer and the role that Bob Moses and others played in organizing that and the compromise that LBJ forced on the people. But after that, other southern states got the idea to send an alternative slate. So there was a little convention held in Macon, Georgia, and I remember one Saturday morning, a student, someone invited me down, went down, and was selected to be on that slate in 1968 at that controversial and tumultuous Democratic convention that ultimately led to the nomination of the lady, Senator Hubert Humphrey, Vice President Humphrey, and really the election of former President Nixon. But I say that to say this. The standard Democratic regulars from Georgia after 1968, they went back south and voted from the Democratic Party. Everybody know the strength of the Democratic Party. A lot of its strength was in the South. With Nixon and the Southern strategy of 1968, they voted. But they left a vacuum, and young, energetic political figures on the local level, especially after the Gary Convention in Gary, Indiana, I think in 1972, they all, a lot of African-American politicals came forward. John Conyers and many others I can name. They're still up there. Or they've been up there for years on the local level. Most of our legislative representatives, Senate and House in the state of Alabama, been around for years. They're aged. I had the opportunity to meet very briefly with a powerful African-American political. I think he made a statement on the radio that he is approaching 75. Okay, and he's not the oldest. And he's certainly still effective, but the point of the matter is the handwriting is on the wall. That's the problem with the Democratic Party, is the sapping of the energies of the African-American political through the arduous process of time. That's what's going to bring about the crisis. I guarantee you.
Well, one of the things I've learned is that, and I've been arguing right here in Jersey, as I said, came from a meeting, they come from a meeting, and I'm arguing that we have to start training young people 16, 15 years old. And
we better. We better start training.
And I'm hoping to finish perhaps another term in the City Council of Blendon. And hopefully I'm training someone right now to succeed me. I'm hoping by that time this young man would have finished finished college and would have graduated from law school and prepared to take this post on. This month, if God spares my life, I'll be on the planet 7 years, 7 decades. And I'm not interested in running. I want the audience to know I was never interested in running in political office. I don't know, maybe associating with you, brother.
But Newton. See, brother, you got fire from Greenwood, from the green tree. You got a spiritual basis that can energize you. So your age is not necessarily the impediment that it could be, because as you said earlier, your training as an imam, the spiritual makeup that's so firm can generate a certain energy that can neutralize some of the aging process. We know that. I just thought I wanted to add that.
Yes, sir, I would say that. I appreciate your kindness. I think what has happened is I'm associated with men like you, and it became infectious. I didn't know I had the political bug. I told one of my sisters, I said, you know, they dragged me into politics. She said, well, now my nickname is now NAL. She said, you know, you should sit on the porch with Daddy and y'all was talking about politics from the time of Eisenhower. I said, well, she's 90 years old, so she does know her baby brother. But I've been a close observer of politics. I never thought I would be a participant and win in the elected office. I'd like to you to answer this question. What do you think of, and I told a group of Muslims this today, I was drafted into politics, I didn't run. I didn't ask to run. I was told, asked another candidate to drop out, dropped out. What do you make of those kind of what I call a shotgun wedding?
Well, it's my belief that just like in every other aspect of life, the Creator can open some doors. So if a person get an unexpected opportunity that come his or her way, if the door opens, they should kick it open. But as a matter of general community strategy, we should be very proactive in running for office all over this country. And I tell you what, if we don't do it, the immigrants gonna do it. And our boys is gonna be shut out. Right now, they don't understand the game enough to really be effective on a national level. You have some exceptional individuals in their ranks who make a pull it off and do a good job, but the climate and the times favor that acculturated African-American student of Imam Muhammad who understands the American culture, who understands the American landscape. We should be shaping at the bit, trying to run for office. And believe me, the sky's the limit in every state.
And you know what, I tell you something, I was telling a group of young people and older people, I never ran, but when I came to this town, everybody thought I was running. And the posture was, I didn't see myself as an imam of a masjid. I saw myself as an imam in a city. And I went about the daily task of visiting the sick, comforting people, going to the funerals in town. And most everybody who passed in town, I was at that funeral. And I didn't do it out of political instinct. I wanted to introduce the name Imam Alfred Muhammad. And every time in the church, they would ask me to stand, and I said, I'm Imam Alfred Muhammad, visiting from the community of Imam Warfdeen Muhammad. I just want to give you the greetings of peace to all of you all. And I did that all over town. Everybody in over town knew, had begun to know me. I go to baseball games, sports games.
Well, brother, politics is a very excellent dawah tool. Very excellent.
Yes.
I can remember riding down a street in Selma, in the most affluent neighborhood in the city. And every last one, at least 90% of those yards, had a salaam sign, which meant that we had to learn the greeting.
Right.
Then I could go in East Selma, the ward that so graciously voted me in as a council person, the hardest hit ward in the city. And you could see the same thing. I would have billboards up during the Jubilee. And people from all over the country would have to come and look on these billboards all around the town. Salaam for this, salaam for that. That's dawah. Many average, everyday, bubble-like Caucasians are familiar on some level with non-television Islam, simply because Salaam and the Muslims made our rounds when we were in politics. What do I mean by that? When I ran for state representative, we literally went to almost every household in Dallas County, Alabama. 45,000 folks. The whole county, knocking on doors. I'm on one side of the street, some Christians and Muslims on the other side of the street, and they coming, handing out literature with Salaam name on it. That's dawah, brother Imam. So people don't understand that the masjid microphone only extends so far. What do I mean by that? And cut me off at any moment. When we got involved trying to establish the Selma Islamic Center, we had what was called community development classes. I would imagine in a 2 to 3 year period, maybe 400 people came to those classes. I think about 125 to 150 actually took shahada at the time. That was in 1990. Many old folks learned the deen and left and went, Selma went all over the country. Why did I run for office? Because at some point, the market for the community development class cooled off. And so there was an idea, how can we reach more and more people where they would have access to the Islamic boys? So I said, some people came to me about something. I became convinced that, hey, I'm going to extend what we're doing up here, extend the dawah. I'm running for office. That's what motivated me to run for office in Selma, Alabama. It was not behind a political aspiration or a political agenda. Once I ran, Allah blessed me to be inspired to come up with a solid agenda. But that was not my motivation.
Yeah, the same here. You were more motivated by keeping the message, the dawah. And I was just reading an article by Imam Muhammad. He said that Islam is an ideology. I think so many of us get it twisted. We think it's a religion. We think it's a set of rituals. But it is an ideology, just as communism, just as capitalism, just as progressivism is an ideology. And Islam is an ideology. And I will say this to people. I am a living proof that you can rule from the center. People know my positions on social issues. I don't hammer on the social issues. But, you know, your name speaks for itself. But I think what disturbs me, now you may can help me with this, what is wrong with most of us just think we need to just stay in the masjid?
Well, I think that's a blatant misunderstanding of this religion. But I studied the immigrant Muslim. When this travel ban came up, they didn't stay in the masjid then. You couldn't find an airport in a major metropolitan area, especially when Euro-Americans start giving us some play, that they didn't show up and show up in large numbers. They got political then. It's just that they fed this palm, or this, let me put it this way, this pet milk Islam to African-Americans, convinced us to give up our very valuable tradition of community activism, social activism, the tradition of Imam Muhammad, who said the only reason why he came to this religion, it was not because Eastern Muslim convinced him of this or that. He came because he used to hear his father and his father's ministers talk about freedom, justice, and equality. So I don't know where we got this idea from. It's certainly not within the tradition of al-Islam as initially brought by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad or his son later on, or even Farad Muhammad. I don't know where that came from. But I do know one thing. It's very conducive for the egotistical priesthood to put the sheep to sleep in the masjid to advocate that kind of stuff and thereby empowering them as some kind of intercessors with the Creator, with Allah. Pumping all that mystifying Arabic out. As long as they can do that, and put the sheep to sleep. I went to in Atlanta, enjoyed it, being around the believers. But the substance did not deal with the world and the problems that we are saving on, that the people are experiencing in America. A few days after a 17-year-old Muslim sister coming back to the masjid, after going making suhoor and getting her brain beat out with a bat, and we could have some kind of big service with large numbers of Muslims there and don't even mention it. See, that's the kind of insanity we're dealing with now. All kind of imams peacocking and strutting around.
And what about in the West End, what they call College Town section of?
Well, they were representative there. All the representatives of the Atlanta Masjid, everybody put on the same level. Atlanta Masjid put on the same level with the West End and with the various sheikhs and others around Atlanta. Look, now this may be controversial, but I got to tell it like it is. Don't put the man work on the same level as these other folk. And don't be telling me to come together as some kind of fantasized Umat unified when we're not unified, and I'm certainly not going to put down what the imam taught us just to say that I'm even Steven with this other little sheikh over here that got his crew, or the West End that got their crew, and then somebody going to say, as the imam said, come out of these little sects. What? You done reduced the imam and what he did to a little sect? Man, that's ridiculous. A little sick. Don't be trying to make me feel like I'm small because I want to maintain the integrity of the imam community. We're not a sect. We have been raised up to remake the world. And no shape, bullshit, is on the same level. I understand the politics of that, but that's all it is. Masjid intercommunal politics is not real. Soon as we leave the building together, everybody is divided again. It's not real. So I'm certainly not going to demean what the imam did to engage in some kind of artificial fake unity.
Yeah, my question was also, I said they didn't mention that my son is almost scared to go back to Atlanta, to the West End, where it's dangerous, what they call the College Town. I haven't heard any of the imams in Atlanta address the violence. The fact is that most every day a Morehouse student or Atlanta University student is robbed by some criminal who should have a Muslim brain in his head, a decent brain in his head, but nobody's out there telling him to come out of the nonsense. What do you say about that? Shouldn't that be the message of the Eid?
Well, if we're going to get back to our picture, okay, and what's the picture based upon? The original pattern of Adam. And what was Adam, what is Adam all about? Resurrection. And how can Adam be resurrected on 60-arm span, which he may have said is the social life? Who's in need of more a resurrection process than African-American people? And you can't resurrect people merely by relying upon a selfish appeal for individual piety and exaggerated Hayat Salah in the Adon. No concern whatsoever about Hayat Salah. Okay, and the piety is important. And the book says, but be just because justice is next to piety. So if you're not concerned about the community life, then you're not concerned about justice. What is it that we want to do? Walk around with a false show of piety? All the little Islamic cliches, the little dress, the incense oil, and all that kind of thing?
And
being
and
separate from America?
African American brothers and sisters.
I didn't hear you, my brother.
And make ourselves superior, feel superior to the average African American. That's what I see is the big problem. I mean, we just
brother,
want to be different and above them. That's our problem.
I had to tell one of my daughters, she said, Dad, I read a book about if a people are conquered, it's because they take on the language of another people. I said, it's something to that. So she said that, well, the Muslim world, if it want to get back, it needs to be dominated totally by Arabia. I said,
wow.
Well, let me give you something on that. First of all, the Muslim world does nothing excellent without taqwa. The prophet didn't say nothing about being superior based upon a language. Every Muslim in the world could speak with the best Pusa. But if there's no taqwa, then it's for naught. Second of all, I had to ask her, well, what kind of language did Frederick Douglass speak? What kind of language did Benjamin Banneker speak? What kind of language did all your freedom fighters speak? And I said, if you study the globe in the last 400-500 years, there's only been one spiritual political leader that could match African-American freedom fighters, the whole group of them. And that was Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi was the only one in their class. The Muslim world didn't produce any kind of extraordinary prophetic-like people that spoke truth to power and got big changes in the culture. Nation of Islam, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his forces spoke truth to power. Dr. King and his forces spoke truth to power. And they spoke English and got big changes. The Muslim world came up with all that Arabic, came up on the domination, imperialism, and colonialism. So we have to understand that, how we have been misled. I said, hey, baby, you need to study your dean a little bit. Me and my wife started laughing. And she said, yeah, she done stopped studying her dean. But she had good character now. Good character. She's not out there with a lot of jaleel. But totally misunderstood what the man was all about. She's not by herself in our community, brother. And I came up teaching a certain way all my life. But even maybe some of these ma'am children didn't listen to him the way they should have. I don't know.
Right.
You may know.
I do know. I get you. Well, beloved and beloved people, we are not out of message. I can assure you of that. We could go on from here until doomsday. Well, not doomsday, it's the light day. But we are out of time. So I thank you, my honorable and noble brother. We look forward to seeing you again next Saturday on Religion Means Alive, live from the great city of Selma, Alabama, the last battle station of the human rights movement. I don't like to...
Can I make one statement, brother? Man, we know that Muslims sharpen steel like steel sharpen steel. And if there's any critique that's aimed at our brothers and sisters is because of our love and our desire to see this tradition of Al-Islam in a more excellent form in America to vindicate to vindicate the striving pioneers, from Sister Clara Muhammad on round to the regular believers, their sacrifice, their suffering, their toil, to vindicate the position that the Imam took about bringing a more excellent understanding of the Holy Book and the most excellent example, the character of Prophet Muhammad. That's what we're all about. We're not criticizing, critiquing just to bash. That's my sentiments, and I'm sure that's yours as well.
Absolutely couldn't be expressed any better, and no court of law or any court of public opinion better than the most eloquent spoken. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. Listen once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. We'll be on again tomorrow at 3 o'clock, regular time. Education for New World Patriotism. This Sunday, we're going to be celebrating this week, Monday, and Tuesday, New World Patriotism Day. Freedom, justice, and equality. I am your radio host, Imam Alfred, of Religion Means Alive. Thank you.
As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam.
9-2-5-2-5.